When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
All right, people, we got a German-themed block party. Thanks for watching. I'm your host, Mike Wall. If you're enjoying, hit that subscribe button, like, rate, and review us on our YouTube channel, Process to Perform. You can find this podcast hosted by Believe Network anywhere you find your podcasts. Certainly find me at MikeWall68 on X or Twitter, Process to Perform on Instagram. And our show is always sponsored by our heroes over at Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from Major League Football, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, players, props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get into the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And I really wanted to go through today. We've got all these rookies coming in. They just had the rookie minicamp. And I thought it'd be interesting. I'm not sure everybody knows really what's going on in these rookie camps and these OTAs. And, you know, you think about, you've got all these guys coming in from, you know, maybe these Power Four schools, Power Five schools. What is it, Power Four now? Power Four schools. You got these guys coming in from some Division Two guys, some 1AA guys, but all different programs, different weight programs, different ways to approach the weight room, approach physical development, different schemes, different techniques. And, you know, it's always been my belief that the best programs are run by a leader that has, like, his or her way of doing business. So in the case of, you know, the Green Bay Packers, that would, for me, that'd be head coach Matt LaFleur, but it might be Goody. I'm not sure. But, you know, coaches come and go, players come and go, but you got to have your way of doing business. Nothing changes. You can obviously make some adjustments to your scheme. You can make some adjustments to your personnel groups. But when you think about, like, I should be able to hand you a manual or like watch a DVD and go, this is the way that we communicate with our athletes. This is the way we treat each other. This is the behaviors we expect on the practice field. This is the behaviors we expect in the weight room. This is the way that we're going to approach strength and conditioning. This is the way that we're going to acquire information in the film room. We're going to teach you how to film study. We're going to teach you all the parts of the building, that from nutrition to the athletic trainers to the equipment guys. This is how we treat people. This is how we ask for things. This is the process that we go through. Like, those structures are important because they allow people to let their personalities come out. Like, once you put that structure in and you put that framework in, that really allows your personality to come out, because you're not ever questioning where you got to be, how you got to treat somebody, what, you know, you already know what the expectations are. So I think that's where, you know, structure really allows people to be free. I think a lot of people don't feel that way intuitively when you make a statement like that, but think about how much freedom you have when you understand exactly, you know, basically where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing. So these rookies are all coming in from different places, having different expectations. But I wanted to give you kind of a look behind the curtain of exactly what goes on during these mini camps, what goes on during these OTAs. And I'll say this now, forgive me if the microphone and everything's not working as well as usual on the road. It's just going to be part of that. And I'll start with this. I was a supplemental draft pick, you know, that held out for a couple of months. So I didn't experience any of this firsthand as a player myself. I didn't even show up to the Green Bay Packers until I think week three or four of actual training camp. But I was around these as a vet, obviously. And then I was working on multiple teams on the other side of the football. And so understanding kind of what these guys are going through in the process. And I'll say this, the other thing that's really grown, or not grown or evolved, but just changed a lot in the last 20 years, is in the life cycle of the National Football League, we've hit the brand development cycle. And so I'm talking about both the players and talking about really the Green Bay Packers or any NFL team. the team views brand development so much differently than it did 10, 20 years ago. And you think about, you know, the easiest person to look to, obviously, is Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones has made the Dallas Cowboys. I think they're the most valued franchise in all of the world of sports. Even though I don't think they've won a playoff game in 25 years or 30 years, they haven't won of anything of any significance since, you know, back in the days of Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman and so on and so forth. How do they do that? Well, Jerry Jones has made his focus eyeballs, clicks, selling merchandise, dollar signs essentially over wins and losses. Dollar signs have replaced wins and losses as the priority. And I think for a lot of teams, like I remember the LA Clippers back in the day, it was very blatant that, you know, the owner was just trying to make money, not trying to win games. But it was interesting. I was watching this, of all things, I was watching this Hulk Hogan interview. I think it was on the Joe Rogan podcast recently. And he's talking about Roddy Piper. And he's talking about how they had this tumultuous relationship, obviously on and off air. And then they became friends when they retired. But he said to Roddy, when they were friends later on, he said, "Do you know how much money you left on the table because you weren't willing to play the game? Because the fans didn't care who was the champion. The fans just wanted the story. They wanted the drama. They wanted the back and forth. They wanted Hulk Hogan to be able to chase somebody or somebody to chase him." Hogan is like Jerry Jones. Hogan realized that the theater is the draw for the larger fan base. And I'm not talking about the diehard, you know, the NFL diehard guys like me who just want to see, like, I want teams to win. But the larger fan base, the ones that want to see Taylor Swift perform at halftime or are interested in that whole drama, like the wider audience that's still going to pay, eyeballs count, care more about the drama than the actual wrestling, than the actual wins and losses. The longer you can stay in front of the camera, the better. And this, like, this kills guys like me. You can imagine it kills guys like me. I just want to train hard, kick ass, go hang out with my wife, go hang out with my friends, win as many games as possible. That's it. Everything else is fortuitous. The model's different, and it made a lot of sense back then. But then Roger Goodell comes through, and he starts protecting the quarterback. They start skewing the rules to protect the offense to score more points. They start lengthening the season now. And all of this stuff is bad when you look at it from a pure football standpoint. Tom Brady talked about it. You change the rules so now people can make bad decisions because the consequences are that the defense gets penalized. You extend the games and players are already just strung out by week 16, 17, are now split. Looks like two more regular season games, plus they add playoff games. From a business point of view, whatever brings in more money has got to be good for the business. So even if the actual wrestling, in terms of Hulk Hogan, Ryder, even if the wrestling's not good, like the best, if you watch the best interviews of the best WWE, like real wrestlers, they're not the most popular guys. The most popular guys, the guys with the being stay on camera for the longest. So with that, talking about these rookies, right? And the business cycle, the life cycle of the NFL was a talent development platform because you didn't have any free agency, right? So you identify some talent, really, really have to develop because they were going to be that was your team. Free agency shows up, and now it becomes a little bit more talent ID because now you can start looking around. Development doesn't fall off, but the priority is now you just have a bigger a pond to fish from. Then they start reducing practices, off-season, all of this. So now talent identification becomes way more important than player development because you don't have the time. So they kind of shelf player development to a certain extent and look at, let's just acquire the best athletes we can or the best ready-made players and then create systems where they can show off their athleticism, maybe more so than their technical aptitude, their football intelligence. Now, obviously, this isn't true at every position. This isn't true at every place, but I think you get my point. So when you look at rookies coming in, what are they going through? Well, maybe now more than ever, there's a ton of meetings with like the PR staff, fan engagement guys, like figuring out how they're going to present the players to the fan base how the players and the team are going to interact, whether it's on, you know, interviews, social media, locker room stuff, podium stuff, out in the public stuff. They want players to interact with each other. They want players to interact with the team on social. Media training's always been around, but it never like it is now because there's such a pop. Like, you can actually increase your value to the team if you have, you know, millions of followers on Instagram or X. We've seen this obviously maybe more so in soccer now than anywhere, but the NBA, the NFL's coming around to it too. I will say this, and this is the part that I like, because I think that there should have been mandatory media training in college. Every athlete, every student athlete should go to mandatory media training. There should be a class, because people that can speak well in front of the camera tend to, you know, do a lot better as far as promoting their brand. And, you know, the guys who promote their brand, because the fan base votes for the Pro Bowl, votes for the NBA, MLB, NHL, MLS, All-Star games. Like, the fans matter with these votes. And now I think you have to vote on Twitter or the X platform to get on to get to the Pro Bowl, I believe, or it's something like that. So it counts for a lot. So, like, this stuff really starts becoming, like, organizationally a really big part of the picture, because the more high-level players you have, the greater the value of your franchise. Now, for the football part, and the most important thing these guys are going to do on day one is, like, the most important thing, at least for me, is they're going to go meet with the new sports performance division, and they're learn how they're going to become professional athletes. And luckily, most of these guys are coming from programs in college that have this stuff already. High-level monitoring, recovery modalities, nutritionists. They're going to have a lot of stuff, so they're going to be very familiar. But, again, each team has a way they do business. Each team has a different relationship between, like, the sports performance director and the head coach as far as how they want to conduct themselves, what data matters to them, if they're going to do anything with practices based on how certain players are showing from a acute or chronic load standpoint. Every building just does things differently. So it's important for those, for athletes to start engaging with those guys early and just understanding how the communication flow works. Most of the guys, and now I start talking about just like the strength and conditioning part, most of the guys have a lot of room to grow and develop from a strength and conditioning standpoint, because they're coming in at 22, 23 years old. You're not going to peak physically until you're closer to 30. So they have a lot of development from that aspect over the course of the career. And they need to understand, are they in a group that is, you know, doing some, you know, hit workouts? Are they with a powerlifting guy? Are they with a guy that just wants to do a bunch of circuits? Like, if you're not with the right guy, you might have to go find somebody else outside of the building to get the kind of training that you really need. And then it becomes this, especially when you're young, it becomes this kind of push-pull of, all right, if I do what you want to do, can I do what I want to do? Or am I, you know, if I'm with a guy that's just going to do like one round of a circuit every day and that's the workout, well, that's probably not good enough. For guys like me, that wouldn't be enough. So how do I start navigating that road so I don't get, again, you drafted me because of what I can do. I don't feel like I'm going to be able to do what I can do when you have me doing that. So how do I kind of start navigating those waters? And then the same idea applies to kind of your initial meetings with your position coaches. And these meetings are a little bit different because the vets aren't in there. So the speed and the depth of the conversations is going to be different than it will be when you have like an 8-year safety sitting in the room. You don't want to open the fire hose all the way up on day one if you're a coach and just drown these guys in information. What I pushed for when I do coaching development series, when I go talk to coaches about this kind of stuff, maybe the most important thing, and it might not be the day one thing, but the most important thing that most of the college guys don't understand how to do is watch film like a pro. How not only to watch themselves and how to break down tape on themselves and understand their tips, tells, and tendencies, but also how to do that at a global level, like the way the coaches watch film, and then at a local level, the way that they need to watch film and understand their opponents. And now in different buildings, this can be done with like the position coach, can be done with the assistant coaches. The game managers can do a really good job of this as well, because when you start working a game, as far as, all right, what are things going to be happening when you're on the 40 going out? What happens after a turnover? You know, what are the tendencies of certain teams in these certain situations? You get to the 35-yard line, do they put their starting defensive line back in? There's just a bunch of things that happen on the field that you kind of have to be aware of. And like information gives you confidence, so you want to know this stuff. It isn't gratuitous at all, because it does give you an idea of exactly what to expect from the other team. And I really do think that watching tape is, or getting the most out of tape, is like supercharging your development process. Because when you start to understand, not just watching yourself, but really breaking down into some basic stuff, like what are you, from a detail standpoint, what do you really need to work on? The faster it's going to happen on the field, the better you're going to be. Now, here's another thing. The first impressions, like once they get on the field, so they go through meetings and they're installing all this stuff. And I haven't even talked about install because, you know, quite frankly, like every team's going to do that. And it's basically going to through the same structure. A lot of you're going to go through the coordinators are going to go through like the basic install. They'll go to their position coaches and they'll go through some details. It'll be interesting to see, like, are the running backs, tight ends, and offensive line all sitting in the same room together when they go through like the run install. So either the offensive line coach, like everybody knows what they're looking at, what the landmarks are, how they're thinking about things, what the expectations are from the tight end position as far as how we're going to block. There's a lot of stuff that goes on there that's different in different buildings, particularly that tight end offensive line thing. I always find that interesting that like tight ends don't learn how to block the way the offensive line does. Like sometimes the tight end guys goes off by themselves and technique's poor and you're trying to figure out like why that makes sense at all. But I did want to mention this, like first impressions are not as important as fans think they are. And I'm talking about like on-field first impressions. Because all these guys have been studied over and over and over by the personnel guys. They've been interviewed. The film's been poured over by the position coaches. So like, you kind of know what you're going to get. Now, a guy shows up out of shape. He shows up in shape. Obviously, he has some sort of attitude problem off the field. Or, you know, he's just the guy that you thought he was going to be. That's all different than what I'm talking about right now. It's first impressions like on the field. Because obviously, as a fan base, you're just desperate to see, you know, somebody catch a pass over somebody else, or you know, somebody drops the ball. What does that mean? Or you know, I like his pass that I don't like. Like you know, you'll go on and you'll see somebody run a route. Maybe the ball is overthrown or something, and there's a form of 4,000. Oh, what does that mean for the season? Like, it doesn't mean anything. You know, unfortunately, like I was so lucky to play in an era where that wasn't the case, but now like social media. It's pretty much ruined all the importance of coaching, like learning coaching styles, understanding the speed of practice, details that matter most, like all that stuff that you bring in. It's a learning experience. So you're supposed to make mistakes while you're learning. And you want to be learning in a safe environment because I think a lot of coaches close practice, quite frankly, because of it. Because like you don't need all the outside pressure. Because all the outside pressure does is it would be interesting to see how many players actually don't listen to social media, don't listen to the radio, don't watch TV, like are completely insulated from everything. Like it's impossible. But when you hear these guys, like the natural tendency is to, even if it doesn't bother you, it's still out there. And you've got, you know, people watching things out of context and commenting on them, which is fun for the fans, what we talked about above. If it sells tickets, it's great. But it doesn't mean anything. Because these guys should be having a hard, like if you walk in on day one and look great, you're not being pushed hard enough. That doesn't make any sense. You should be trying to stretch the limits of what these guys know, how they operate, how they function, what they can do from a physical standpoint, what can they do from a processing standpoint. Like if you're not trying to find the limits and you're just trying to like make everybody look good, what the hell's the point of that? You're never going to get any better. I think that is the reality sometimes. If you look at it just strictly from a, how am I going to get the most out of these guys? Well, push the limits, how are you going to get the most out of them? Now, the rest of the time is spent meeting with various groups in the building that can improve the process for each player. You're thinking about the athletic trainers. They're probably really high up on the list as far as keeping you healthy, what kind of things, what their expectations are, as far as when to show up, especially as you're a rookie, you got to show up a little bit earlier because the vets want to, when the vets come in, you're going to get kicked to the back of the line. What recovery modalities would they recommend in certain situations? Do you have to reserve times to see somebody specific? Do they have a chiropractor? Do they have a massage therapist? Do they have an ART guy? Do they have a dry needler? Do they have people that you can reach out to? Do they have guys that come into the building? Like all that stuff, vital information for an athlete who's trying to maintain themselves at the highest level. You think about, to go along with that, maybe the nutritionist. The kitchen staff, certainly if you're in a building that has a kitchen, like an operating kitchen staff, getting to know them really well, because there might be days where you're like, hey, man, can you kick me a couple extra chicken breasts, right? The video staff is super important. The guys that are in charge of the iPads that will give you the film. Video staffs are so great now because, like, let's say, for example, I'm playing against a defensive tackle and I want to see, let's say it's even a rookie camp, and I'm like, hey, man, can you kick me down, like, all his third and eight pass rushes from his last season in college? They'll give it to you, right? And you can start studying tips, tells, and tendencies and become that much of a better of a pro. Now, nobody's probably doing that because, you know, you think about that when you're done. But it's stuff like that where you can really get ahead. And these video guys love putting together those clips. They love working with the players. That's why they're there. So there's just so much you can gather and garner from different parts of the building that, you know, maybe we take for granted, and we really shouldn't, because it's those details, those basic things that really matter. What else? Oh, the last red baddie just retired, the equipment staff. Huge importance. And then the last thing that I would talk about is there's a player engagement person or people in each building, usually an ex-player at some level. I think Gray Rueger is still the guy in Green Bay. He was an ex-teammate of mine, a two-time Super Bowl champion with the Patriots and the Giants. Is that right? Or just the Giants? I can't remember. But usually a great mentor, great liaison, especially for guys that are trying to finish up school, for rookies that are coming in. These are the guys that set up, like, the financial well-being seminars. These guys set up all your retirement stuff. If you're trying to go continue an education, if you're trying to set up a foundation, if you're trying to set up a football camp, these guys are just absolutely vital to helping you with that transition process. And they're a lot more accessible, I think, or easier to talk to because they've been through the rigmarole as a player before and kind of understand what you're going through, the pressures, you know, internally, the pressures from your family members, the pressures from the media, et cetera. So unlike maybe the PR team that's like, hey, let's get you out there, the player engagement guys, like, let's focus on making sure you're right so you can deliver your best. They're really, really a vital part of the process. So let's talk about this. We talked about some draft picks last week, and I just wanted to pop up some final thoughts on some surprises before I get to some tape on some of the later round guys. You know, I did have a couple of surprises in the draft, a couple of questions. I wanted to just give it a week removed and give it some thought. You know, I suppose the Jordan Morgan pick was a surprise in the sense that, you know, he was the seventh lineman taken, but all three of the center guard, tackle, you know, Zach Frazier, Graham Barton, and JRJ were all available still. I thought they were really, really good players. I think Barton got picked right after him. You start wondering just where Morgan was on their board. Like, you start wondering where Morgan was on the Packers board, because he was, the sixth tackle, or maybe he's a guard, but and the second guard picked, or, you know, however you want to look at it, the seventh lineman. So you just wonder where, and there's all these defensive guys that, you know, were not picked up till the 15th pick was the first guy, the kid from UCLA. So you start just wondering where he was on the board. I think that's interesting. Again, I really like the Peyton Wilson from NC State. Now, Adrian Cooper could be tailor-made for the defense that we're into now. Peyton Wilson is a slightly bigger guy, a lot worse injury history, but a fast guy, hits, you know, is a little bit more lead in his pencil as far as thumping guys. I really like Cooper. I was surprised that he was available. There are, you know, it's always interesting when they, you know, they had the pick at 41. Then the kid from Iowa, the Dijon kid, gets picked at 40. So Green Bay trades back. And you just wonder, are they stalling? Because the kid Kool-Aid from Alabama goes, I think, next. Or are they just looking at the board like, there are so many guys that are on the board that we don't mind moving back four or five guys? You know, Zach Frazier's still on the table at that point. Texas running back still on the table at that point. So you start looking around and going, it just makes you wonder, with all the talent that's still left on the board, we don't know how these guys are going to play out. We don't know how they were ranked. But it wouldn't have been a stretch to pick up Cooper there, certainly. And so you just wonder if they're looking at Dijon, and then once that doesn't – I hope I'm saying his name right. But once that doesn't happen, are they like, don't feel good about it? Trade comes in. Let's move back five because there's at least five guys on this board that we would like to have, and it'd have to hit perfect for us at the end of the year. Talk about the Bowler pick last week. Bowler pick is huge. Best player, in my opinion, best player position in the draft. We did see safeties lose some priority last year. We saw the kid, obviously, I was talking about Brian Banch because I thought he was so good coming out of Alabama and just dropping maybe a round later than you thought he was going to be. I think the Packers got away with one in the second. I think they drafted two of their top positional guys in Cooper and Bullard. Too good to pass up both those guys. If you like Peyton Wilson, fine. I did. But you got to look at these, arguably for the Green Bay Packers, they're probably the two top positional guys on the board in the second round. That's crazy. Safety and linebacker. I mean, vital, vital pieces of the puzzle from a defensive standpoint. Nuts to me. You look at Marshawn Lloyd, you get to the third round and beyond. You've already directly addressed every area of need as I think most people saw it. Offensive line, linebacker, safety with the last piece running back. So you kind of have the leeway to spend these picks now on guys like Marshawn, who you already know coming out. Okay, there's some fumble issues. Is there some pass protection issues? But he's definitely a change of pace guy, even though he's 220. He's definitely a different type of runner than Josh Jacobs. He doesn't have to contribute immediately on offense. He's going to be a second guy at best. And you can start making these, we just call them value picks, whether if they work, you look like a genius. And if they don't work, it's okay. There really wasn't like an electric Bijan Robinson. There really wasn't a Jahmyr Gibbs on this year in this year's class. So we started looking at Marshawn Lloyd. He might be that one or two guy that is maybe not a workhorse, but he might be that change of pace. I mean, he averaged 7 yards a carry at USC. So you start thinking to yourself, like, again, really, really solid pick for the third round. They picked a couple other guys. I wanted to focus on the safeties, Evan Williams and the kid out of Oregon, and the Ketan, I hope I'm saying that right, Oladipo, out of Oregon State. Different bodies, okay? So Williams transferred from Fresno State. I think leads the team in tackles. I think he has like 4.5 sacks last year. Love the way this guy moves. I'm going to break him down a little bit more. I love the explosiveness. He didn't run as well as I think somebody thought. A couple people thought he had a better pro day. He's got a 40-inch vertical, guys. I mean, the kid's a machine, all right? There's going to be some range questions there we'll get to. But another really, really good pick. Like Bullard and that guy. And then you talk at Oladipo. 6'2", 216. Looks like he could carry more. He looks skinny. He looks like he'd be Cam Chancellor if he wanted to be. True box safety. Kid wasn't a football player early on, so he needs some refinement. He gets caught flat-footed and square on routes, and I'll show a couple. But you look at these later round guys, and I go back to the Cam Chancellor. The Seahawks had a lot of these guys. They just fit what the coordinator's trying to do, and all of a sudden you have a superstar on your hands. And I love this pick because he's different. Like you bring in a high free agent, a high price free agent. You get Bullard, you get Williams, and now you got a kid who doesn't look like any of them. They don't have anyone like him in the room. And now he brings his own style of play to the safety position for the Green Bay Packers. So you got to like I love that dynamic. And again, when you pick him in the fifth, it's like, it's no harm, no foul. Now we're going to start this by looking at, is it Tyron Hopper, Missouri, 6'2", 231. As I watch the tape here, I like the play speed. Lacks consistency. He misses a lot of tackles, actually. And again, you're talking about a linebacker who's 231, and it's just, I don't think they do a good job of teaching technique at the college level, but he has a hard time getting off blocks. Well, let's watch a couple. The first thing you notice when you start watching tape is, and because the same thing happened with Cooper, is like the theme of the day now, we got to run pressure with linebackers all the time. Like these guys run more dogs than I've ever seen. Just absolutely insane. Having said that, you love this rush right here. dips the shoulder, has a good rip. I mean, terrible technique by the right tackle for Georgia. Or is that Clemson? Sorry. But the way that he turns right here and gets around, really, really like that. Takes on a double from a receiver. And the tight end slips, ends up making the play. Like the physicality, again, not against a big player. Exact same play to the other side. Just he kind of has this one dialed in, right? Okay, I'll just split you both, get in and make the play. It's got some suddenness to him. Got some suddenness to him. Like the transition speed here on the quick screen. Again, guys, like not everyone's trying to look for tackle, you know, and making tackles on highlight tapes. I care about the way he moves, the way he attacks blocks. Like you have to get to the position to make the play. You just like the quick burst there. This is – okay, there's two things that are – I say that's terrible. There's two things that are terrible here. The one is the way that he doesn't get off the block. But the real crime here is number 63. Because I don't know how much that guy weighs. He looks like Lurch, right? I mean, he must be 7 foot, 400 pounds right there. He couldn't be any taller, even out of a two-point stance. I mean, look at 71. 71's – should be the bigger guy at the tackle. Look at the bend there. I mean, 63. If you get blocked by that guy standing almost straight up in your two-point, that's terrible. He just gets mauled right here, pushed out of the way. Just not very physical, right? And it's not that he's not physical. I'm sure if you walked into the room right now and I saw him, he would just kick my ass, right? But at 231 pounds, it's just really tough. Same thing. Going sideways here. You got to run through or get around this guy. You got to be able to push off him. You don't want him to get body to body. So you can stiff arm him out. You can club him through. You can rip under. But you can't let him get body to body with head across. This is exactly what the lineman wants to do. You just got to get better at this. He's going to have to, you know, end up turning around trying to make a play late. That's not what you're looking for. So there's some physical traits there that you like. You like the aggressiveness to the ball. He's definitely a downhill kind of player. You like his retrace speed. So he's got some gifts. And he's clearly, I mean, when you watch the tape in totality, he's a good player. College. But again, I always go back to, and, you know, Jeff Hadley, I think very recently during minicamp was talking about how important technique was. And, you know, there's a way that I always talk about taking techniques, how you demonstrate your passion, your aggressiveness for the game through precision, accuracy, and violence. And if you can teach these guys proper stances, proper body position, how to get off blocks, if you make that a priority, guys like this turn into really, really good players. If you don't make it a priority, guys like this turn into special teams guys. So it's how they develop. Let's go to Evan Williams. So here, 5'11", 200 pounds, Oregon. The guy's a fire plug, man. Like, built for contact. Like, 5'11", 200 pounds. He's well built. The closer, the better. And I mean that in the sense that even though he's 5'11", 200 pounds, and I thought he did a really good job in college, you can split him out, and, you know, but he's more of a box guy. He likes to be around the line of scrimmage. He's a sure tackler. There's going to be range questions, especially with his 40 times. And, you know, luckily you brought in Ginley, who can play that other side. Obviously, Jonathan Bullard can play out there. And so you're kind of looking for who's going to be in it. Obviously, they have Keyshawn Nixon. But how are you going to run your defense? Do you want three true safeties in? Is this guy going to be able to fight for some playing time? If you watch the tape, the answer is yes. If you watch the tape, the answer, this guy's going to be on the field somehow, some way. Now, quick shout out to, I think it's, what is it, Quick Clips? I build out this whole deal with these clips and you know, highlight and do all this stuff. And I record it and I put it away. And it forgets every single one of them on the next two guys. So I got to go through again on Final Cut and just circle. So my apologies, these look different. I got frustrated. I swore it off it forever. I threw a fit, the whole deal. I look like a baby, but we're just going to have circles. You just see the tackling. Just he's hard into contact. Always, always hard into contact. just always a downhill kind of guy. You're going to see he makes the tackle. He makes the play on the tackle over the top, comes over. Just really, really physical player. Really physical player. Love it. I showed this play because I just thought he did a really good job. He kept the space. He flipped his hips very well because there were some range issues or questions, I should say, not issues. There's questions. But I thought he did a really good job on what this is like a chair. He does a really nice job in this outside release. Gets his hands on the guy, flips his hips well, stays level with him. He's going to be able to run with this guy even, right? Or if he can break on the near hip if he tries to run it out. Really nice job. Coming downhill again here. He's quick to trigger. He likes playing closer to the line of scrimmage. You know, he's not an 18-yard deep guy. He's not a 15-yard deep guy. He likes getting up close. He wants to put his head in there. He wants to make contact. Play in the middle. He's always going to be that robber guy if he can. You know, if you're going to run a three high, you start two high, you rotate in, you want to run lurk or robber. He's always going to be that. He's going to be the lurk guy. He doesn't want to, he's not going to want to play as deep. And you know, quite frankly, with Xavier back there, with either one of these guys, I think Bullard or Evan Williams here, I think they would both be in that situation. I just feel like they're both going to be better in the box or better in that lurk position if that's what you want to run or that if you're running like a three buzz out, you know, to the sideline or the flat. I just feel like they're probably going to be that guy more than the post. Love to come off the edge. He had a couple sacks last year. Obviously, everybody looks good on block, but you still got to make the play. I think I showed this one more time. And again, quarterback tries to step up. He takes a really good angle. Unblocked stuff is unblocked stuff. But having said that, you still have to make the play. This is on Shador. And listen, you know, quick and dirty. I really like that guy. He's a really good player. Sometimes when these guys don't test well, then you start looking at film and going, you remind, okay, he only ran a 4.56 at his pro day or what, you know, whatever. And you go, okay, well, he's got a problem, blah, 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 blah. I see him as, I think he's just better closer to the line of scrimmage because I think he's a really physical player. He's built for contact. I don't necessarily see these range issues. When I saw him playing in the slot, I didn't see the issues that maybe some other guys saw. Now, that could be, I'm not watching enough tape. I don't have enough of a sample size. But sometimes what happens is you run a slow time, a slow 40 at the combine, and everybody goes, oh, well, you got range issues now. It's like, no, you don't. Okay, so I still think these guys are going to be interchangeable. I don't know that he's going to beat up. I think Bullard's top guy. So I don't know if he's beating him out for playing time for ruin two guys. If you want to keep Nixon in the game because you think he's going to be. I would think the interesting battle here, quite frankly, is between Evan Williams and Keyshawn Nixon for who's going to be that third guy rotating in because all those other two guys – can play everything. Do you feel like Keyshawn Nixon can play both safeties and the slot? Or do you bring in a guy like this who's a natural safety, put him in the slot? Do you feel like he's going to be good enough in the slot to be able to play all those, maybe play that star position to have all three guys in at the same time? That's what's going to be interesting. So that said, the last guy who's a little bit different, 6'2", 216, Oregon State, my dad's alma mater. Average range. He is not a speedster, not great at flipping his hips. He's got a lot to learn football-wise still. He started a little bit later in the game. He does have good block evasion and 6'2", 216. He can always be more violent, but he's pretty violent. When this guy wants somebody to go, you know, get down, he's going to hit the deck. Again, not sorry for the circles, but, you know, it's chopped up. And it pisses me off, quite frankly. I spent some time on it. And then, you know, I don't know what we're doing over there. Quick clips. Downhill, just likes to be physical, throws his body in there. Coming off the edge here he's trying to read both. Not a big highlight. Wow, look at that circle. Great job, Mike. He's in the middle. In the play. He's not a missile. So another way of saying good block evasion is he kind of jitterbugs around a little bit, like really quick. Gets sideways. He's slippery. But I wouldn't say that he's not like a heat-seeking. He's not like watching Brian Dawkins just come downhill on somebody at all. And, of course, different body types, but you understand what I'm saying. He will hit to hurt. You do have to get out of his way. He will throw a shoulder in. Now, this is kind of the thing that you look at and go, okay, we need to take him out of these situations. So you're down on the goal line, and you'll see this. He kind of gets stuck, not favoring a side, not having enough leverage, and he kind of gets stuck here flat-footed and square and gets beat back inside here pretty badly, actually. They throw that post. He's done for. Okay, and if you watch a couple of these plays, it's that he lets that space get closed a little too much. He's a little too square, and then that hip rotation transition speed is going to be lacking because you're in a bad body position. So a lot of that can be coached out or improved because of a technique. But I think naturally, if you looked at all three safeties, you would say while he is the biggest, he probably also has the worst, hip transition speed. Not that it's bad; it's just not as good as the other two. Coming down here. This is how you get nicknames, though. You want a nickname? You just make more of these tackles. I mean, it did look like he died right there. This is awesome. I hate that it's in slow-mo because the speed of it's even better. But he just snaps that dude, man. If that guy got a concussion back, hitting the back of his head right there, I wouldn't be surprised. Really, really violent player. All those guys have a very, very good chance of making the team. So talked about it last time. We got a fourth round on, first three rounds. It's like you're going to make the team unless something bad happens, right? You make a real bad mistake. Either you're just not at all what you thought they were, or you've done some off the field stuff, or you're bad in the locker room. You're going to make the team the first year. Fourth round on, it's a coin flip. And I think these guys, Goody did a really good job, I think, of obviously putting people in a position. Like, you're not drafting a wide receiver in a crowded wide receiver room, if you get my drift. There's room in the linebacker with a 4-3 defense. There's room to add linebackers. We just got rid of three safeties. There's room to add safeties. So these guys they're walking into an open spot. They just have to take it. So I think that from that standpoint, you got to feel good about your chances of making the team and contributing, obviously through special teams, maybe first and foremost, with all three of those guys, quite frankly, to start out with. And then, of those three, you really think about Evan Williams being able to maybe work his way into some playing time this year, just based on how he looks on tape in relationship to other NFL safeties, kind of what he brings to the table. I will say this, though. 6'2", 216 with the ability to maybe put on 10 pounds and improve, refine your technique a little bit. That's a guy that transforms the way you play defense. In other words, DC has an idea of how he wants to run it. You get this really, really unique guy. And I don't know if you can do it anymore because all the rule changes, but it's just an intimidating tackler. Guys across the middle are getting knocked out. Tight ends are getting shut down. Really, really hard hitting, box defender, violent. That changes the way you play defense because you already know what you have from free agency. You already know you got Devon Bullard. You've got the other guy. So is there a way to put somebody on the field that does, to be fair, have limitations that maybe the other kid doesn't have? Talking about Evan Williams. But adds a physical presence that, quite frankly, you put 10 pounds on him, he's another linebacker. Your linebacker is only 230 pounds. So if you look at it from that standpoint, now you start thinking about, okay, what are the opportunities now to run 4-3 with him in? Add 10 pounds, call him a linebacker. What are the opportunities to run with four safeties? Because the way that my safeties look are different than the way that your safeties look as far as body types and the ability to play multiple positions. So I think all that stuff gets really interesting because of the way they drafted. But you have to figure out first and foremost, are they going to adapt to the Green Bay Packer way of business? Are they going to be indoctrinated properly when they come into this mini camp and then obviously through OTAs? And then how fast is it going to take some of these guys to contribute? I mean, a lot of guys these days can contribute early because the schemes are set. You know, a lot of the offensive stuff at least is set for college. I think defensively that's probably true as well. I don't know. I didn't really think about it, but I don't know how much of a factor it is for safeties and linebackers defensively of what specific type of, college or a single safety, double safety, you know, team. Do they run nickel? Do they run a 4-2 or 4-3? Is it Big Ten, Pac-12, SEC, ACC? Does that, you know, how much does that all factor in? What do they think about it? Obviously, you're 3-4 guys and 4-3 guys is kind of an easy way to cut the cake from a box standpoint. But when you're looking at everything else, it'd be interesting to see. And I think I'm probably talking about linebackers more than anything now. How important the structure matters when they're deciding whether or not they can use this player, and then how much it matters from a personnel standpoint. If I can get Tyron Cooper on the field day one or day 100 or 2025, that kind of stuff, I think it would be nice to pull back the curtain on that, because every team's different and every answer is going to be a little bit different. So that said, wrap up this show. Thanks for watching, guys. I will be back, I think, stateside next week. Like, great reviews. Hit me with some questions. We'll get to them. Thank you as always.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.